right, episode 129. We're back, and we have Kyler back instead of Rob.
Yep.
Yeah. Welcome back, bud.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah. That's where, you know.
It's good to hear my voice like this.
I know.
Well, deeper than it usually is.
These microphones are so great, though, that it sounds like, oh, man, you know, it makes you sound better than you are, I guess.
Yeah.
You know? So,
yeah.
It's
like sports talk.
When do you ever hear yourself in these giant headphones, too, that are kind of covering your ears?
Luckily, never. Because hearing your voice, you sound different than you think you sound.
I know, but going through a mixing board, you sound better. You sound better,
yeah.
Right? Versus when like, oh, I listened to a voicemail or I saw myself on video or something. You know what I mean? Like you sound, that's bad audio. This is good audio.
That's right? True.
So,
that's true.
So speaking of good audio, we have no plan for what we're about to talk about today. So here's what I'm going to do on the spot, episode 129. And we got two designers on the podcast. Off to a bad start already. let's do this. Let's put you on the hot seat and go. Okay. How about this? I'll ask you a question and then you ask me a question or what, you know what I mean? Or we can ping pong back and forth and hopefully not have too much dead air. Right.
But hopefully
I would say you've been with us a hot minute now. It's been a while, which has been great. I would say what have you learned since, working here? You know, is there anything that comes to mind? You know, we could always do the easy breezy. Hey, what's been your favorite project to work on this year?
No, I don't want to do that.
Or things like that. Yeah. You know what I mean? But like, I think something that maybe is unexpected is, hey, what did you learn or what did you maybe not, you know, and that can be relative to, oh, I thought it was going to be this, but it was really this instead. You know, like it doesn't have to be like a literal answer, if that makes sense.
The number one thing I've learned, and I think that this was something that you talked to me about early when I first started working.
Oh, wow. Okay. Here we go. Callback.
Is you mentioned once, like, you know, creativity isn't a light switch.
Yeah.
But it kind of becomes like that when you get better at doing design.
Yeah.
I think the number one thing I learned is that you just kind of end up with this kind of playbook.
Okay.
Make it like a sports analogy, but a playbook. Yeah.
We love sports.
This is the project that I have. This is the, you know, the play I'm going to call kind of thing.
Okay.
And you try several different things, but there's kind of an immediate reaction when I get a project as to like, okay, I think that X, Y, Z would work.
Mm-hmm.
And you just go ahead and start working on that stuff.
Sure.
And then along that way,
and then you a might funny thing happens
navigate,
along the way. Yeah.
You know, to find something else. But it's, if you just sit there and twiddle your thumbs and wait for like a big idea to hit you, you're not going to make a whole lot of good design. You're not going to make a whole lot of good art or anything. You know, part of it is just getting in and doing. But I've just learned that through repetition and through seeing a lot of different kinds of projects, you just kind of end up with a way to navigate a project where you're able to hit the ground running pretty quickly.
Yeah.
And that expedites everything, basically.
Well, we're big on efficiency. We're not big on sitting around and doing a lot of, I mean, it's kind of our jam is, hey, we get in, you know, and we're a kick-ass SWAT team that rocks it pretty quickly, you know, and that's our unique selling proposition, right, is efficiency and how do clients want to define that? Because we can do a stellar creative project extremely quick if need be, you know, right? Nimble because of the way that we operate, right? So let me expand on that for just a minute. Do you feel like it's you start in a comfortable place? Is that kind of what you're like you've got your playbook is what you said, you know? So it's like, okay, hey, I've just been given this assignment. It's packaging or it's whatever. I know I can start with, you know, concept number one is going to be bim, bim, you know what I mean? Like sort of familiar territory, right?
Yeah, I think it's that. I also think it's just a matter of once you've seen enough projects, there's enough of like what you can draw on and think, the last time I did a project like this, this seemed to work really well.
Yeah. Okay.
Or we tried this with a client. We loved it. They didn't go for it.
Yeah.
Let's try something like that.
Sure.
I think that for young designers who are in school, and I think it's a good thing that a lot of programs are teaching more of a conceptual kind of practice oriented approach to design.
Yeah.
Where every decision is justified and all of that, you know.
Sure, sure.
Which is great on paper, but
in a utopian academic existence.
But, you know, what you don't learn in school necessarily, maybe some of the teachers or professors that are a little bit more realistic, is that a client could very well just drive the whole thing off into a different direction where all your justifications or reason for doing things. We had a project like this recently, ends up getting thrown out the window anyway. This was from we picked up a design from a previous agency that had all these, you know, justifications for where the inspiration for color theory and stuff was coming from.
I know where you're going
from.
With this. Yeah.
But in all of that stuff is can be really cool if you have total complete control over a project.
Yeah.
Which you almost never do. So.
Yeah. Well, because clients get in the way. Yeah, you know what I mean? Yeah, and then not only clients, but then their clients.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, whoever they're selling their goods and wares or services to.
And in this case, it was also the project that this other agency had initially started has now grown. And therefore, you end up with these problems in an otherwise pretty well thought out system.
Yeah.
And then the whole system becomes this tangled mess. And you got to figure out how to make it more linear and make more sense.
Yeah.
But I think that going back to the previous point, I think that once you've seen is another sports analogy, it's kind of like, how do you call an offense against a defense that you've never, gone up against?
Yeah.
I feel like the more you see types of projects, types of clients, and also it also is when you're working on accounts that you've worked on for a long time, you become more familiar with their taste
and
what the, look is.
Which theoretically will make a better relationship between client and design firm or agency like us, right? Because you know upstream what they're up against and things like that. I mean, we've worked with one of our clients for such a long time, and I'll just get an email that's like, I need a sell sheet for this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they don't even expect it. Yeah.
There's like, there's no brief. There's no this, and it's like, hey, write copy for this new product. And it's like, the familiarity is what makes us efficient and great in that scenario, right? Because it's like, okay, I don't need you to write like a 2-page brief and give me all the, let's just, we already know where, just pick up and go. Boom. Right. You know what I mean? And then it's okay. Hey, here's the first pass. Mm-hmm. Edit away. But I've taken away 90% of your work and your thinking that you have to do on your side of the fence.
Right.
Because I already know the system and the universe and what we're trying to do.
And there's trust and all of that.
Yeah, absolutely.
With new clients, there's a combination of there's a lack of trust because there's a lack of that relationship.
Yeah.
But also you don't necessarily know what they're looking for, what they have in mind. And then a lot of clients can have a hard time articulating what they have in mind.
We've talked about it in the past. They don't speak our vernacular. Right. So they say weird analogies.
We want to look cool.
Yeah. We make the logo pop. You know, it's like, well, hey, all the direction you're giving me is what's going to do the opposite of exactly what you're asking for. But they don't, that's our job to extrapolate what's the best creative solve. Hey, you asked for this. Mm-hmm. Here it is.
This is why this works better.
But here's a better solution to that scenario, that type of thing. So, Well, I think that's an interesting answer that you gave in terms of it's a little bit long and winding in terms of repetition makes it, but starting with the fact that it's not a light switch. But again, we're not fine artists, it is, I don't want to downplay, it's commercial art, right? I mean, it's like, hey, I have a business need to solve this problem. I need you guys to help me solve the problem.
Well, see, there was a previous podcast, and for those of you who are listening, I edit them, so I listen to all of them.
Yeah.
But there was one where you and Rob were talking about art versus design.
Mm-hmm.
And I have a different take on art versus design.
Really quickly, for those that haven't listened, what was the synopsis? Since I don't even remember myself.
I think the synopsis was Rob was definitely more in the camp of like, yes, absolutely, design is art.
Okay.
And you were like, it is. It's commercial art.
Yeah. Okay.
My take on it is design is not art.
Okay.
And art is not design.
Okay. I'm okay with that.
Now, there's like a broader view of like, oh, all things are art, like a samurai sword is art.
Sure.
But
now,
fine art.
How are you defining art, I guess, then, is the question. Are you defining it as fine art?
Or I'm talking about fine art. Like otherwise.
Because, yes, I mean, architecture is art.
Everything's art. And on one hand, we're talking about like, what is art in terms of what is fine art?
Yeah.
In my opinion, art can't serve a function or an application that is commercial or military or something like that.
Okay, so it's art for art's sake.
It's art for art's sake.
It's just for human expression.
Right.
And that's what separates us from the animals.
Yes.
Right, because, I mean, they can't make music. They can't make, paintings, that kind of stuff, right? It's just the human emotion and the human expression artistically.
But furthermore, I would say, because I had a professor at Georgia. He actually wasn't a professor. He just came in to critique our senior thesis.
Okay. All right.
And he said, and he was right about this, that he was like, a lot of, we presented and all of that. And he said, a lot of you guys, or he said, the function of design is to take the complex and make it simple.
Okay, I'm okay
and
with
from
that.
From a basis, he was just basically saying, you're taking what's difficult to understand and trying to make it easier to understand.
Understood.
And he was saying, you know, a bunch of you guys have taken something, a simple concept and made it complex, which is the opposite of what the function of design is. And in my opinion, that's more of the function of what art is, where I think taking an overlooked or simple thing and making it, and kind of asking a question about it versus design should be answering questions. Art should be doing the opposite, I feel like, if that makes sense.
It does. I think another way of saying it is that design needs to have a solution,
right,
and to your point, answer a question.
Yeah.
Art doesn't need to do either.
Right. Doesn't need to do either, but if anything, it would be the question.
Yeah.
Not an answer for it.
I think that's interesting. I'm down with that. So
there goes Daisy.
Yeah. Well, she's barking at somebody.
Yeah.
It happens.
Yeah.
Dogs in the office, man.
Yeah. We have two dogs.
Yeah.
One of them's louder than the other.
Yeah.
I'll say that.
Well, one's a leader and one's a follower too. It only takes one to get him barking. Right.
Yeah.
So, all right. Well, that's interesting. Any questions
I was trying to think of,
I forgot my water. So I'm a little,
Yeah. You know. Oh, I brought a Diet Coke and I'm afraid to open it because of the.
No, that's fine. Well,
I can edit it out.
I was about to say, I know who's control. Editing this. Yeah.
I guess my question for you would be, what's the biggest difficulty when hiring a new designer?
The biggest one.
Because I know there is quite a, it does take some time to get into a kind of symbiotic.
Yeah, I will get to the answer, but before I get to that answer, I will say that I'm not going to say it's the obvious things about talent and this and that and whatnot, right? I think what I've learned over the, because it's kind of, if the topic of today's podcast is what I've learned is that talent, you know, like immediate talent or what your portfolio looks like can only be so good, right, to begin with. You got to fit in with the chemistry is important, right? And vibe and attitude, you know, we can teach you how to do certain things. You know, we can teach you clients, we can teach you rules, we can teach you, you know, I mean, time permitting, of course, you know, and, you know, but I can't teach you to be an eager beaver that wants to learn,
right?
You know, you either kind of are or not. Right.
Right.
So I'm going to flush all of those kind of obvious answers out the beginning. And I'd say, the biggest challenge is understanding a certain's capability to juggle multiple projects and the speed with which they can create, right? There's no way to know that until you kind of throw them in the fire, right? So, you know, I can go, oh, this person would fit the vibe. Mm-hmm. You know, oh, this person has a great portfolio. Oh, this person's really a great designer. Oh, this person's a good art director.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, this person has great typography. Oh, this person, you know, like this person's very versatile. There's, you know, there's a lot you can judge very quickly for criteria within the shop. And that, you know, and just because somebody doesn't get hired here doesn't mean that they're not a fully capable, amazing designer, you know.
Right.
Just like when account directors or clients or brand managers don't get certain jobs, it's not necessarily always a reflection of them or their skill set. It's partly the fit, right?
Right.
But the hardest thing is, you know, we are very varied, very varied in
very varied.
We're very varied by design. Wow, that sounded weird. But like we're jumping all over the place. We're on websites. We're on packaging. We're on identity. We're on in-store point of sale, we're on digital ad campaigns. You know, we do a lot of different type of tactical things, right?
Mm-hmm.
So mirror that with, hey, dude, I need my stuff.
Right.
Right. That's really impossible to judge until someone's here.
Yeah.
Right. And generally speaking, I'll take this one step further. Great art directors and great designers aren't necessarily unemployed. Right.
Right.
So in a perfect world, it'd be like, hey, come sit in the ejection seat here for 30 days and let's do a trial run, you know? And I'm a big fan of, it has to work as much for you as it has to work for us. You know, like we need people that want to, well, you know, we don't need, but like I would much rather, and it's better for everybody if people want to be here because they enjoy being here versus, hey, I just need a pay, you know what I mean? Like that type of thing, right? Yeah. You're just a better creative, you know, when you're chill about that aspect, right? But you can't have someone do a trial run if they already have a gig somewhere else.
That's another big thing.
You know what I mean? So I would say that's the answer to the question is it's hard to gauge how much you can load someone up before they crack. Yeah. You know what I mean? And how much can people juggle? It's juggling. It's a juggling.
Different types of projects with different accounts. So you're doing different kinds of design on different applications of design and all of that.
And some designers really love, like, just, hey, they love to be busy and have a lot of different things. And some people just are linear and I got to stay in this one lane and this is what I'm really good at. And I have to finish this before I start something else. And I can't, you know, and that's just not the way our business is. Our business is, you know, we are going up 50 different flights of stairs, one step at a time, running between each flight of stairs, depending on where clients are with the process.
Right.
You know, we're not just, hey, you're working on this one project until it's done.
Yeah.
It's like, no.
No, that's definitely not how it is. But I would wager that's not how it is most. I mean, I guess at super big agencies, you might have a team on dedicated to one account one project.
That's pretty standard. Or one initiative for the year, which might be broken out into several.
Right.
Promote, like, let's say you're working on Wendy's. You know, I'm making that up right now. You're going to have your quarterly promotions. You're going to have your limited time offer products. You know, your LTOs. You're going to have Frosties or a dollar. You know, you're going to have all these different things. Dollar. They're not a dollar anymore. I don't know.
I'm assuming they aren't. Yeah, I don't know. Maybe they are.
But you know what I'm saying? Like they're going to have their, you know, there are six new product launches, there are four quarterly LTOs, you know, and you're going to have a lot of benchmarks that are consistent, right? Mm-hmm. And you're going to have calendars that are planned out for 18 months, you know?
Okay.
And you kind of, you just methodically go through that. And there's a team of, you've got your account director, your creative director, your art director, your that, you know, and it's, oh, this person's working on that part of the project, this person's working on that part, you know, that type of thing, right? But they're not jumping from all these different accounts to different accounts. Okay. You know what I mean? They're kind of just, you know, on that one team.
That would be too repetitive, I feel.
Yeah, it's not for me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I like jumping between things. I will say probably when I first came out of college, I definitely was more of a linear minded designer where I was like, oh, I really want to get, you know, but
it's what you're used to. Like I've got 10 weeks to really sink my teeth into this thing. Yeah. And then just, here comes me going, dude, I need this tomorrow.
Right. Yeah.
And you're like, what? Yeah. Like, tomorrow?
Yeah.
Like,
or today?
Yeah. Can I have it by lunch?
But that becomes a whole different kind of challenge that can also be rewarding and fun.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, there's excitement in moving on.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Versus, like, I like things to keep it moving. You know, like, let's keep things rocking and rolling so that it's, you know, it's not lingering here for 10 weeks.
I mean, I used to paint a lot. I still do some painting.
Yeah.
But I used to love the beginning of a project, like the ideation portion of the project, and like trying to figure out what it's going to be and then just starting. And I love, you know, the ending of it, varnishing a painting, stepping back and being like, wow.
It's done. Yeah.
The majority of a painting is everything in between, and that is the kind of just slog.
Is that work?
Yeah, that just becomes work.
Yeah,
you figured it out. You've staged your thing. You know, you've maybe photographed. You're looking at this thing or whatever.
Yeah,
and then it just becomes like, you know, well, I just, you know, spent 10 hours on this corner of the painting.
Yeah.
You know, and just gonna work my way through.
Painting is remarkably technical.
Yeah,
you know, if you want it to come out the way that you have envisioned in your mind, I think I used to joke with a buddy of mine. We used to go out for Sunday brunches before we were married and had kids, and we had all the time in the world to talk about art and stuff like that. And I would always joke that, like, to your point, the inspiration, the lightning bolt, the doodling, the plan, all that stuff up front is great. At the end, for me, it's like just a husk of a shell of what was like. It's a cicada shell that's left over. You know, like all the life's already gone from it. It's just, here's the product left over.
I get that a bit too.
Yeah. Yeah. And a lot of times, like, it kind of takes a turn in the middle somehow where it's like, it's either not necessarily frustrating, but it's, oh, this is different than maybe I had imagined a few weeks back. Yeah. It's still fun. It's still good, but it's not, you know, it's like, okay, let's just wrap this baby up and move on to the next, you know, lightning, you know, because there's always like, you know, oh, what if we did this? What if we did that? What, you know, you know, God, all we ever do is talk about AI constantly. Right. But I'm reminded of that quote and I'm totally going to butcher it. That's basically like, you know, creative people, you know, AI is almost for non-creative people to help them generate the ideas, like to execute the thing. Right. Yeah. You know, for us, we don't need AI because we have too many ideas coming out too fast.
Yeah.
You know, that it's like, we can't get them all out. And I feel like painting for me was kind of one of those things. Like, I'm already halfway done with the paint. Like, I'm mentally kind of checked out because I kind of want to work on the next idea I've already got lined up.
I have a lot of unfinished paintings in my little studio.
All great painters.
I have ones where like a significant portion has gotten to like this not hyper realistic, but very realistic and rendered portion. Yeah. And then there's like white canvas or like bright, because I tend to like wash my canvases with like a dark color to just get rid of the white.
Yeah, that's cool.
And you'll still see like some pencil sketches and like a little bit of a grid back there and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And I'm like, sometimes, I don't know, like I look at it and I'm like, I kind of like it like this. And you know,
that's cool.
That painting of FDR, his last portrait?
I don't know.
It was painted here. Can't remember where in Georgia, at the little White House where he lived.
Okay.
And he had died of a hemorrhage while posing for the painting.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And
I don't know this.
The painting is like, you know, half unfinished.
Yeah.
But it kind of became famous.
Well, that's the best part. It's like the Michelangelo, like when you go to Florence and it's the David Museum and you see all the...
Oh, the captives?
The slaves and everything going through and whatever. And it's like the half marbled... half kind of chiseled.
Yeah.
That's far more interesting to me.
Oh, the captives are really cool.
Than the technical masterpiece of I mean, it's incredible. Don't get me wrong. I mean, it's absolutely incredible. But how you see, like, here's this humongous block of marble, and then how he could see through that and start to reveal what was in his mind. That the process is, what we're talking about right now is that the process is so much more interesting than the end result.
That was a piece that kind of teetered on modern art because in some ways the people or the subject matter is interacting with the medium.
Yeah, totally.
Which is totally not what the function of art was previously.
Correct. Know? Yeah.
That's a cool one. When you go see the David, there's a room that precedes the David and you walk through and those sculptures kind of line it as you're approaching the foyer.
Yeah,
where the David is.
Yeah, guess who set the alarm off leaning on the
did you really?
Balcony? Yeah.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Good Lord.
Yeah. Boop, 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 boop. That wasn't me. I'm out. Let's go, honey. You know, like, it was pretty funny. So
I want to go back. The David is a lot bigger in person than you imagined it.
It's gigantic.
It's huge. Yeah.
Yeah, it's gigantic.
And it really is like pristine, like white marble.
It's unbelievable.
Yeah. It's much more impressive in person. It's one of those pieces also where like everyone always says, oh, the David's out of proportion. It's like, but it was made for people who are standing below it to look at it.
Yeah.
And so the foreshortened aspect, when you're looking up, it compensates for that.
Well,
it's actually really well done. Yeah. He didn't anticipate cell phone pictures.
Yeah. Are we seven heads tall or are we eight heads tall? You know what I mean? In terms of what proportion is, but it's literally what we were talking about earlier. Context matters and clients. To turn this back around at design, you know, we're in a digital age where we send everybody PDFs, you know, and I'm constantly reminding people, this is a trade show backdrop.
Yeah.
You know, the bottom half of your trade show backdrop is going to be covered by tables, chairs, book bags, and people standing there. Like, stop trying to put copy at the bottom of your trade show, you know, and we're working on...
Or they'll be like, can you make the logo bigger? And I'm like, it is currently 3 feet wide.
Yeah, exactly. But you're looking at it on, you know, worst case scenario, your phone. You know what I mean?
A cell phone. That's what a lot of them probably are doing.
Yeah. And it's like, or hey, I got my iPad or I got my 13-inch laptop and I'm looking at this PDF giving review, you know. And it's like, no. Guys, think contextually. Yeah. Or how many case stackers have we done for brands? Clients aren't thinking, oh, wow, the case stacker is filled with actual products that has the, you know.
We need more logos.
It's like
the product will be there.
You know? Yeah. So, you know, David, I think, is a great example of that. Like, you can't, like, yes, in Janssen's history of art, you know, like, it's not meant to be presented in that fashion. You know, right. It's not meant to be photographed that way. It's not all right. The different
things.
But think
things, about right? like 90, however many percent of all people.
Yeah.
That's the only way they
that's
see
the only,
David.
Yeah, exactly.
A picture of the David.
Yeah.
Taken from way back.
Yeah, telephotos.
Where you see
yeah.
a full length,
yeah.
you know.
Yeah.
But when you're standing underneath it, it totally does not look out yeah. of proportion at
yeah.
all.
It yeah. looks remarkably different. It's incredible. Yeah. So. All right. Well, we've gone off the rails a little bit in terms of
yeah,
what we've
okay.
learned. But no, it's all good, man.
Okay.
All right. I always ask Rob, as you know,
you
know, where can everybody find us, Kyler?
You can find us online at mocktheagency.com and on the socials at mocktheagency.
Exactly. All right. Yeah. We'll see you next time, everybody. Thanks so much.
Yeah. Take it easy. Podcast.